have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
I'm Ann Northrup.
And lots of pride news, LGBTQ pride news from around the world. But our guest today is Andre Thomas, the co-chair of New York City Pride, which has ignited a firestorm by banning uniformed police, controversy at pride parades around the country and in Canada.
Yeah, we have a lot to talk to Andre about. Very interesting. Meanwhile, the U.S. Secretary of the Interior has snuck in a visit to the Stonewall National Monument while we were all discussing this other stuff.
A baker in Texas suffered a backlash for selling rainbow cookies and then received a surprise from her community.
So heartwarming. But my heart is warmed by my favorite display of the rainbow colors this year on the uniforms of the San Francisco Giants.
It's history. We will tell you about the highest ranking transgender journalist in the country.
And Texas gets its first out black elected official.
Florida's wicked governor, Ron DeSantis, vetoed funding for LGBTQ services, including for survivors of the Pulse massacre.
We were fascinated to see that the daughter of a governor and a Kennedy came out this week. I think we need a little group interview with the parents of all these children coming out.
All right. But we mourn the passing of the founder of God's Love We Deliver and a pioneering black HIV researcher.
There has been a legal breakthrough in India, very exciting, and evidently some progress in Chile as well.
And the new director of the Office of National AIDS Policy is a black gay man.
About time.
And we welcome another black gay man, Andre Thomas. Welcome, Andre.
Thank you. Thank you both for having me today.
Co-chair of at New York City Pride in the midst of this firestorm of controversy. We should say that you were born in Trinidad and Tobago, and you've worked behind the scenes in performing arts, and you went to Yale with a degree in molecular, cellular, and developmental biology. I could go on and on.
I think we'll go on and on if you could pronounce all the words.
We are going to put your bio into our email, and we remind our viewers, if you want to get our emails, go to our website at gayusatv.org, and maybe make a donation, too. But anyway, welcome, Andre.
Thank you.
So it's been quite a season already. Mm-hmm. And, of course, as our viewers know, I'm a co-founder, I guess, or one of the original creators of the Reclaim Pride Coalition and the alternative or traditional or whatever Queer Liberation March. So I've been involved in these issues for quite some time, too. But we were happy to see that Heritage of Pride, the New York City Pride organization, this year under your leadership, with a fairly newly installed diverse board of directors, decided to tell the New York Police Department that they were not welcome to march in uniform and armed in the New York City Pride Parade. And then all hell broke loose. Mm-hmm. But why don't you tell us about how that decision was reached?
Sure. So, this is a conversation that's been going on in Pride organizations for years and years and years. But, last year, after the events on Pride Sunday in Washington Square Park, the community town hall, our response to that, the community town hall that we hosted that I believe, Anne, you attended, and our community basically admonished us for the kind of lackluster response. We took a step back and said, hey, what are we doing as an organization? why people feel they're not being listened to. And so we decided to engage with a community council of activists who can really give us advice, more, who are experts in this area, can kind of give us advice on what we need or should be doing.
Let me stop you 1 second just to remind viewers that what we're talking about is that at the end of a very peaceful and large queer liberation march, suddenly as we entered Washington Square Park, the police came out of nowhere, out of hiding, actually, and attacked the march with batons and pepper spray, all on the excuse that one person had taken a Sharpie and written a little thing about this big on a police car, and suddenly the entire march was under violent attack from the NYPD. Sure. And I appreciated Heritage of Pride standing up for us and condemning that.
Yep. But go ahead. And you can't go from a 2019 apology for Stonewall, during World Pride, to an incident like that and not sit up and pay attention. So through the past year, working internally with all the stakeholders, kind of continuing to talk with the NYPD and the city, we really decided we need to do two things. Look at decreasing police visibility, decreasing the militarized look, giving us more buffer zone between our attendees at all our events, not just the march, all our events, anything that we do live and in person. A lot of this, of course, is predicated on the fact that we're not doing large-scale events this year, so a lot of these conversations will start for maybe next year, and whatever we do live this year will it's kind of a practice run for doing some of those things also, too. And then looking at the visibility of how the NYPD is either highlighted in our events, either on social media, things of that nature, and how the Gay Officers League displays themselves in our march. Now, we know that uniforms themselves, that's a triggering thing for people of color, for trans people, for brown people. And we approach GOAL saying, hey, we want to be able to have you participate like other cities have done, like Minneapolis did, after the murder of Philander Castle. Their police department declared that their officers weren't marching in uniform anymore. And so we went to them with that offer saying, hey, could you next year when live in big scale events come back, can you take it to a level where you are not in uniform? You can represent yourself as an organization, but you're not in uniform. You're not wearing that thing, that symbol that triggers so many people. And can you work with us to, humanize yourself to the community? And the city and the NYPD has been working with us on the visibility aspect, on community affairs officers who are LGBT, who are trans, or people of color who represent the community, and working with us to kind of tone down the escalation of the police presence. But GOAL decided that they could not guarantee officers not marching in uniform. And that's why we have to take the stance that we did.
So there, again, an explosion of controversy, lots of people saying, oh my God, what, we're excluding people. And let's give a little history here. GOAL was founded back in the early 80s, and one cop was willing to show his face at the parade the next year, and everybody else wore disguises. And eventually, GOAL marched in like T-shirts and had a banner. And then they won the right to march in uniform, which was considered a breakthrough. And in fact, we sued to have the New York City marching band, police marching band, march in the thing as well. But this has become an issue over the years, that there are a lot of people who don't like this look. Now, we're in Reclaim Pride. We left Heritage of Pride, stopped going to that because we didn't want a march with cops. In fact, the police department would never allow police in uniform to march in a protest march, ever. And there we are. But so what do you say to, and you have to respond to a lot of it, to the people who say, you're excluding, nobody should be excluded?
So there's, what we're looking at is equating the right of someone to wear a uniform for a couple hours a day in a parade to the right of someone to feel safe and secure and welcome at that same event. And for us, the priority is ensuring that people of color, people who are trans, can feel that safety and that welcomeness and that inclusion in our events. GOAL can still participate if they decided to take their uniforms off. And for us, is the uniform their identity? Or, because a black person, a trans person, they can't take that off, but gold can. And so that intrinsic part of yourself is something that we know that they can, they're holding onto. And for us, we thought it was a fair, almost non-controversial compromise to be able to let them. Now, yes, you're correct. They won the right to wear the uniform 20 some odd years ago too, but that was then. I wore a uniform myself. I was in the military for 8 years. I know that if I was found out back then, the results, the consequences would be me going to jail and being dishonorably discharged. But for them, they don't face those types of consequences of being oppressed anymore. They're the insiders at the NYPD. And so for us, we're asking them to make a symbolic gesture of standing up for our community and saying that, we recognize that harm and hurt has been done to our community by the organization that we're part of. This is a gesture to show that we see you, we hear your pain. We suggested you could even wear a polo that says police against brutality. Sell that, give the proceeds to a trans organization, and everybody would love you. this would be something that you could show that what you're doing to really take steps to address harm that's been done.
But you had a membership meeting of your larger membership, and they voted to invite Gold back in uniform, but they did something else that's not widely reported. They said, we will exclude an NYPD contingent, right? Isn't that also what they said?
I think that's what the vote turned out to be. But, our executive board decided to, and we're in the way our constitution is framed, our bylaws are framed, that the executive board can decide to make a policy that overrides these membership decisions, and that's what they decided to do.
What's so disturbing to me is what I think is Gold's very closed-minded or narrow-minded look at this whole thing. The Queer Liberation March doesn't want police near it because of exactly those issues of people feeling safe. But in a very broad perspective, we have seen in certainly historically, but much more so in recent years, I think, the brutality of so much of law enforcement across the board, across the country. And for Gold not to understand that people would feel unhappy about that from the police, whether they're attacking the Queer Liberation March brutally or killing George Floyd or Philando Castile or any number of people, or Kowalski, I'm sorry, I've forgotten his last name, in the Bronx, the guy whose apartment they went into and just murdered him, gay guy. It just seems to me so narrow on their part. And you and I were chatting before this, Eric Adams, mayoral candidate who used to be a member of the police force, was regularly standing up and giving press conferences about his complaints about the police force when he was a member of the police force.
Well, he was a member of the Guardians, which was the black police officers group. And
right.
We hear the same thing from the gay officers' action.
We hear nothing from them, nothing from them publicly to question any of the, arresting trans people while walking, letting Laylene Polanco die in Rikers Island, attacking the Queer Liberation March. Any of this brutality from the police is never publicly questioned by Gold.
And for us, just last weekend, there were aggressive, actions in Washington Square Park by the NYPD that even all the mayoral candidates decried. So, right. We're not talking about ancient history. We're talking about things that are happening, on a continual basis. And we've asked Gold, it doesn't take much to even tweet a statement to say, we stand with our LGBTQIA+ brothers against this too. And I think for them, the issue is that they feel that they may lose credibility with the NYPD if they stand up for them. But, you know, the Black Officers Association stood up, you know, against the police union's endorsement of Trump last year. So, and he was virulently anti-trans. So, you know, there are examples of minority-aligned associations within police organizations who stood up to their own. And I think that's the real, you know, point. You know, we want the community wants goal and wants to see goal stand up for them. They may have made it easier for people to become gay cops, trans cops. You know, they may have made it easier for people to become part of the internal system. What we're looking for is for them to stand up for us on the outside. And I think that's really key.
There have been about 1,000 articles written about this controversy, one of them by you in the Gay City News, which you called an invitation to goal, where you reached out to them and you talked about how you're trying to work with them. And we will put that in our email so people can read your perspective on this. But, you know, you've been condemned by the New York Times, the Washington Post, Jonathan Capehart, a gay editorial writer, you know, said, well, I haven't been to it in 20 years, but I think the cops should be able to march. I mean, this is what you're up against.
Well, what I see, what I'm up against is privilege and people who don't recognize their privilege. You know, there's a backlash, and there's a backlash to the backlash. And you're seeing now more analysis, and there are people who actually are part of the conversation realizing that, hey, these are valid reasons. And you know, the clickbait headlines say police and my NOC Pride plans police, and then you get into the more nuanced analysis with more context that actually talks about, hey, these are, you know, they're not actually asking for that much when you think about it too. And the fact that you know, for us, it created a dangerous situation, because from our perspective, the message came out that banning cops meant that we were not going to be a safe event. We know we're on the 5th anniversary of Pulse. This is the 5th year anniversary that we're commemorating. I was working in a DC Pride event the night Pulse happened, and grew up in Florida, had friends. I've been to that club myself. I know what it's like when our community is targeted. And so we've never actually stated that we were going to have a police-free, unsafe, you know, completely free event. You know, we have to work with the NYPD for barricades, for permits to be able to have any event, for sound, for things like that too. What we asked for them, and they were working with us too, is for decreasing how they look, how they feel, more of a buffer zone. The example I use is in 2017 when we had our youth pride event. You know, we had police show up in kind of full SWAT gear, and an event for kids, you know, black and brown kids showing up in Central Park, that's not really appropriate for police to have that kind of militarized look. And those are things we've identified to them, and they said, you're right. So we need to work on that. And I think that is really, you know, the initial headlines created the situation where people now feel that, you know, Pulse just happened. We're allowing something of this to happen again. And that's not the case.
Well, I think Goal is taking this too personally and should instead see the bigger picture. But you mentioned privilege, and so I want to switch this to another part of the conversation, sure, which is corporate involvement in the Pride Parade, because Reclaim Pride is not happy about that either. We think that the parade has been turned into nothing but a parade of corporate floats, that corporations are there not because they're entirely cynical, but certainly they see their corporate interests in finding customers primary. But maybe most of all, the idea that so many of these corporations are giving far more money to right-wing politicians who are passing all these laws that are out to get us than they are giving to any parade or other community organization. So what's up with this corporate?
I'll say that one thing that you told me last year during our town hall was do better. And that's something we've been telling our corporate sponsors, that when they come to us and we say, hey, what are you doing? We've been saying, you can do better. You can do better for us. You can do better for our community. You can do better. So show us what you're actually doing. So instead of, you know, partnering with them on a big float, we're partnering with them to activate with different community organizations, different groups. Target, who's one of our sponsors, for example, and we're not doing a big float with them. They're sponsoring our Youth Pride. And for Youth Pride this year, we were partnering with close to 100 youth centers, LGBT youth centers across the country, as far as Alaska and Hawaii, to have watch parties and safe spaces. Some of these are homeless shelters for LGBT youth. And Target has provided funding for them to be able to have these events to give a safe space for them during Pride. So instead of saying, we're going to have a big float, we're going to see how can we partner this corporation with this community organization to really create authentic ties and support the real grassroots work that's going on. So I think we've come to them and said, do better and really push the work that we're doing.
Well, certainly look into the campaign contributions that they're making. A lot of them are pretty anti-gay in that sense. Mm-hmm. But have you ever considered, I mean, the Stonewall 50, admittedly, it was the biggest one ever, I guess. Mm-hmm. But it took from noon until 1 a.m. to finish, all right? And a lot of it is corporate. Have you ever thought of just asking the corporate sponsors, the good ones, to just stand on the side with their banners and cheer us on and let us march, let the community march?
Yeah, and what we're doing activation-wise for the marchers here is very community-focused, is very much that essence. And, you know, we have to think about planning for next year, how we implement that and how we say, how we say to them, you know, maybe the march is not the right place for you to be at. Maybe you can be at this other event, or you can be here, or you can work with us in different ways. You can sponsor a panel on women's empowerment. Sky Vodka, for example, is giving us $25,000 to give to grants for nightlife workers who've been affected by the pandemic. So instead of doing that thing, we're going to, you know, focus your money that you give to us in other ways to really support the community and go directly to us instead of being on a float going down Fifth Avenue.
Well, yeah, we'd be thrilled to see no more floats, as long as you're quoting me, I will take this opportunity to make this request for next year, which is absolutely vet these corporations on their political contributions and see who they're giving money to. We see this new organization, they're giving hundreds of thousands of dollars to not only individual right-wing candidates, but the Republican Governors Association, Republican Congressional Committees, and all of those people are the ones who are really doing us harm all over the country.
Yep. And we've seen that, you know, their tact has always been to give equally to both parties because they feel that.
Well, that's no good.
It's not good. It's still good. It's still good. So this pause for the year really has given us time to sit down with them and say, do better. And really, if you say you're with us, then be with us.
Well, there's a new group. We don't know who's running it, but they're online called keepyourpride.org. Yes. Right.
Corporate Accountability Project.
Right.
They say they're looking at you as a target because of this corporate involvement. Are you aware of them? Do you know who is running them?
No information about that, Sue.
You're prepared.
I think, you know, last year, for example, we knew that both of these issues, corporate involvement and police involvement, were going to be big things for us to tackle. And so we've committed to giving the time and the space and the energy in order to do those. We can only kill, you know, there's two birds, there's only one stone. So we can only, you know, really tackle, you know, and creatively tackle both of these issues at the same time. And it's an ongoing kind of parallel work that we're really committed to do. It takes a lot of work. It's uncomfortable work.
It's the whole thing is enormous and uncomfortable. And I applaud you for standing up to your membership and their privilege and ignorance and insisting on sticking to these values. So I would say, obviously, there's a long way to go, but I appreciate the steps you've taken.
Thank you. And you know, we're mandating this type of training, diversity training, inclusivity training for our membership. We're in the process of setting it up right now and having it be something that we require them to kind of go through, because we know, we feel that, you know, education is really the way to solve a lot of these problems, a lot of these issues. People sometimes, you know, over the past year, and everything that's gone on, they've seen what's gone on, but how much have they paid attention to it? And so we really need to focus on, you know, our own people and really educate them in the way that they haven't been before. So it hasn't necessarily been the primary focus, but we know it needs to.
We're going to talk about a high court judge in India later in the show who said he went for counseling so that he would learn more about these issues, and then he came around on them. But we really appreciate your being with us. If people want to learn more about Andre Thomas, the co-chair, and NYC Pride, go to nycpride.org. We're very grateful for your being with us today.
Thank you both. Thank you both for having me.
Stay in touch.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Bye.
Okay. Well, you know, I do appreciate his work in trying to push this stuff forward, and it is tough. I want them to go a lot farther, but I think headed in the right direction.
And if you're looking for a march this year, well, there's the Dyke March, the Trans March, the Drag March, and the Queer Liberation March. And that latter one is going to be on June 27th. We're going to meet in Bryant Park, 6th Avenue and 41st Street, march down 7th Avenue past the Stonewall, and over to Washington Square for a rally, gathering at 2:30 p.m. Sunday afternoon, leaving at 3 o'clock. Promptly, right?
Oh, yeah, because we cannot fit the tens of thousands of people all in Bryant Park. So we're taking off as soon as we reach critical mass. So, come join us on Sunday the 27th. But Friday night, drag march, Tompkins Square Park. Saturday evening at 5, Bryant Park for the Dyke March. And Sunday, 2:30, Bryant Park, Queer Liberation March.
And before we get to national news and international
25th,
news.
25th, 26th, 27th.
Let's talk about some more Pride news. Yes, the U.S. Secretary of the Interior, Deb Haaland, visited the Stonewall National Monument on June 3rd. For the 5th anniversary of the designation of the monument by President Obama. By the way, the religious right lobbied to have Trump rescind that designation, but he was more interested in rescinding it for public lands so that they could be exploited by oil companies.
Well, unfortunately, the Pentagon was also more interested in rescinding or ignoring his promise to have rainbow flags fly over military installations for Pride. They're sticking to the Trump rule that limits flags to
being. In fairness to them, this is their way of stopping Confederate flags from being.
That's true. Absolutely true.
All right. So a story in Lufkin, Texas, a bakery called Confections made rainbow heart cookies for Pride Month and started getting hate mail and cancellations of order. And the owner said, "My heart is heavy. I never thought a post that literally said more love, less hate on Facebook would result in this kind of backlash. But the next day, look what happened. It was a big line around the block of people buying out the inventory of all their baked goods, not just the rainbow cookies." So that was it, you know. And this woman said, "If you've got an issue, I've got a mouth."
Well, they sold out for 2 days in a row, at least, and then people started offering donations when there was no more inventory to buy. So this is East Texas, so that's a very heartwarming story. It's also astonishing and heartwarming that the GLBT Historical Society in San Francisco has uncovered and is displaying a fragment, a fairly big fragment, of the original rainbow flag made by Gilbert Baker and scores of volunteers in 1978. Each piece hand-dyed in huge vats of color. And then the leftmost panel is a little dark, but there are 8 panels there. The flag was then reduced to 6 panels a little later because 2 of the colors were too expensive to reproduce in en masse. So then it became a six-panel flag. But this is a piece of the very first original rainbow flag, and it's on display at the GLBT Historical Society in San Francisco as part of an exhibition called Performance, Protest, and Politics, The Art of Gilbert Baker.
Well, Gilbert Baker really got the flag out there, mainly in the early 90s, mid-90s, really made it an international symbol. And look at what they did at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine in New York, the largest church in the city. Look at how they lit it up there with rainbows. It's beautiful.
Well, I actually think the more beautiful version of this is on the uniforms of the San Francisco Giants baseball team, where they've managed to get those six colors plus the trans flag colors plus the black and brown stripes that have been added to the rainbow flag for black and brown communities. And they put that on the cap on the left there and on the sleeve of the uniforms and wore it one night last week. I think that looks fantastic. I love that version.
This is historic because, you know, they have to get the approval from every member of the team in order to do this. And they couldn't get it last year. And they also have to get the approval of the league. But they got it this year. And by the way, the Giants won the game 4-3, are in first place in the National League West.
And the players said they were proud and happy to be able to wear the colors. And congratulations to Lodi, California, which held its first ever Pride Parade. There are always new people coming out. And they got a bigger turnout than expected. So things are up to date in Lodi. San Diego has uncanceled its Pride parade. Because of COVID, they canceled it. Well, they've uncanceled it, but only to hold a resilient people's march. So they are not going to do the whole corporate float thing. They are holding a people's march. I hope that teaches
people
that that's the way to go.
That's in July, and next year they're undecided whether they'll have a march and a parade. Rona McDaniel, the chair of the Republican National Committee, tweeted pride greetings, hailing the disputed doubling of LGBTQ support in 4 years, calling the party a big tent and supporting fair protections, translate that, no protections, for LGBT Americans. Now, this nevertheless prompted Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council, named for the closeted actor who died of AIDS. No, he wasn't. To call for the boycott of the Republican National Committee, if only for its tone deafness to Christian hatred of all things gay. He also wants you to boycott Coke and Skittles.
Well, speaking of which, we referred to this in the interview with Andre. There is an organization called keepyourpride.org, the manifestation of the Corporate Accountability Project, which is alerting people to the misdeeds of corporations that claim to support us and are instead giving a lot of money to the right wing. They're specifically targeting Coke and Bud Light, Anheuser-Busch, which have given a ton of money to the Republican Governors Association and the Congressional Campaign Committee. The problem is, and we told you about this group a year or two ago when they first formed, no one knows who they are. You go to their website, there are no names, there are no descriptions of who this is, so it's a little rich to have them call themselves an accountability project when they won't be clear about who they are. Now, some people say, well, you know, if they come out about who they are, they'll be so viciously attacked by the right wing that it'll be...
Andre Thomas put his name on his cause here, and he is taking a lot of flack.
Exactly.
I think that's
come out, Accountability Project.
Well, the Department of Justice has come out, not only defending Trump in his libel suit where he denied knowing the woman he raped, but vigorously now defending a religious exemption from federal civil rights law that lets federally funded religious schools discriminate against LGBT students. 40 of these students are suing the Department of Education over this, and now our Department of Justice is fighting against them.
Now, these are schools that get federal money for scholarships for students, for research projects. This is not to federal money that, is funding just religious experiences, but they discriminated against their LGBTQ students who are suing them for that as violations of federal law. And the Justice Department is now saying, we support the colleges. We support their right to discriminate.
Right. And we are anxiously awaiting the ruling in the Philadelphia case where the Supreme Court is going to decide this month, almost surely. Could even be Thursday. We're taping on Wednesday, but we don't know whether or not religious organizations can discriminate against us, against the law in Philadelphia, and still receive city money. In other words, do we have to pay the bigots to provide services for us?
Well, while these actual things are happening, at least Secretary of Education Miguel Cardona announced that he supports trans athletes and that the government will help them. Well, let's help the students at those religious universities, too, Mr. Secretary of Education. And Vice President Harris, we know, is in Guatemala and Mexico talking about immigrants and giving some very dicey messages, but held a roundtable with local activists in Guatemala, including HIV activists and LGBTQ activists.
They faced a lot of violence down there, and she's saying, don't come to this country. Now, this is against the backdrop of great progress in the Gallup poll for same-sex marriage. It's now at 77%, an all-time high, up 10 points since 2015, when the Supreme Court opened it to gay people nationwide. Even among Republicans, 55% support. So we're making
progress
in the polls, but not in the Congress.
Well, and there you have Governor DeSantis in Florida, who just vetoed all LGBTQ funding that he could find in the Florida budget, including funds for mental health for Pulse survivors, as Andre mentioned, housing for homeless LGBTQ youth, an Orlando community center, all gone from the Florida budget.
He tried to stop.
He has a line item veto.
He tried to stop rainbow lights on bridges in Florida, but got so much backlash they were put back on. I want to give you a little piece of encouraging news. You know, Deb Haaland, we talked about her. She's the Interior Secretary. Her seat in Congress went to Democrat Melanie Stansberry, who did better than Haaland and Joe Biden did in 2020. So that's encouraging.
Yeah, it's also encouraging that there's a lot of activism and organizing going on in Florida in the wake of these voter suppression laws to organize Democrats and the left wing to be active in the next election. And Virginia just held a primary election and had a very good turnout, which you wouldn't necessarily expect in an off-year primary election. So that's good. Also, the Gay and Lesbian Medical Association canceled its planned conference in Florida because they were so fed up with the bigotry.
And you've all heard about Joe Manchin's intransigence, which is going to kill a lot of the great legislation that we need in the Senate. Option one, elect better Democrats in 2022 in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Wisconsin, and maybe even Ohio. Or get yourself a fairer system of government, because this one does not work.
Well, not in this atmosphere with people who are so shameless and relentless at destroying it. All right. We want to congratulate the executive editor of Reuters, Gina Chua, who has come out as trans at age 60. Came out to in a letter to her staff, actually in December. She was raised Catholic in Singapore, but she is extremely successful as a high-ranking out trans executive in the mainstream news business.
Highest ranking, arguably. She said there are a lot of people who are 14 years old who would like to know that this is not a death sentence. It's not a millstone. It's something you could be proud of, celebrate, and live with.
And in San Antonio, Texas, out gay black Jalen McKee Rodriguez, first black man, first black gay man elected to office in Texas, elected to the city council in San Antonio.
He's been a high school math teacher in Largo, Florida. A non-binary middle school student, Leo Hoffman, 12, stomped on, dragged, covered in water by six kids wrestling over a rainbow flag at his outdoor lunch table. Leo, who apparently can take care of himself, tried to protect his friends at the table. Six of these kids have been suspended or reassigned to other schools. He's at the Seminole Middle School.
And in the state of Washington, voters flying a rainbow flag were attacked by other people around them and boats around them.
All right. Major General Tammy Smith, the Army's first openly gay general, has retired. After 35 years of service, she said, people must find comfort and push back some of that internalized homophobia and build a bit on the journey between honest and authentic.
Tammy there is, of course, the one in the uniform with her wife, Tracy Heppner, who runs a spouse's project for the military, too. Okay, in Seattle, the ACLU and Justin Weatherall, a flight attendant for Alaska Airlines, have written a letter to the airline saying, hey, you better watch out because Justin is non-binary and your uniform rules are extremely binary. And if you don't loosen that up, you are going to find yourself the subject of a lawsuit by the ACLU.
Now, I'm old enough to remember when Andrew Cuomo was a problem on LGBT rights, but he's grown quite a bit, even though he remained a bully, and that's why he's being investigated. But anyway, his daughter, Michaela Kennedy Cuomo, has come out as queer. She says, I'm indebted to the activists who fought for my right to love and happiness. And Andrew said, I could not be more proud. There he is.
With her at a pride parade a couple of years ago. So what is this trend? We have Giuliani's daughter, Caroline, who came out as bi, I think. We have Michaela Kennedy Cuomo. I think this next generation of strange politicians are coming out. I'm waiting for one of the Trump kids, but...
Well, this is the first Kennedy, I think, that is out, isn't it? Who's out in the Kennedy?
Maybe. I think Rory Kennedy may have flirted with it for a while, but then got married to a man. But yeah, yeah, okay, probably. Do we care?
Yes. All right, so... horrible news in the Sonoma Desert. Poe Black, a 21-year-old trans man, was discovered slain near what's called Slab City in Niland, California. It's a collection of camps occupied by homeless people and those living outside of conventional communities. Originally from Nashville, he identified as mixed indigenous, identified as trans masculine. No arrests, stabbed seven times, the 31st trans or non-binary person reported killed this year.
This is a sort of nomad land community, so that's what people are picking up on. In Dallas, four men have pled guilty to luring gay men on Grindr, robbing them, assaulting them, taunting them. They've been convicted of hate crimes. They're going to be sentenced later this month, and one of them in October. Watch out. Please watch out for who you meet online.
I wasn't pleased that bisexual Katie Hill, a member of Congress, resigned from Congress when her husband, ex-husband, engaged in revenge porn. Now, she sued them and two media companies for publishing nude photos of her. But a Los Angeles Superior Court Judge Yolanda Orozco dismissed her suit, versus the Daily Mail and ordered her to pay $103,000 in court costs to the tabloid. The judge said the photos were a matter of public interest that spoke to her character and qualifications for her position. She was also last week ordered to pay $84,000 in legal fees to Red State editor Jennifer Van Laar. Her ex, who Hill said subjected her to 15 years of abuse, remains a defendant.
Yeah. Again, the moral of the story, don't take nude pictures. Well, when your husband gets mad at you, you're in trouble. And in New York City, Lisa Baines, a veteran actress, was in the movie Gone Girl, lots of different movies, TV and Broadway, is in critical condition, hit by a scooter on the street, a hit and run, I think. 65 years old, very tragic case in New York.
On her way,
lesbian. Obviously, that's why
she's on her way to meet her wife, Catherine Krenhold, at a friend's place near Lincoln Center. Terrible. The Board of Corrections in New York City has voted now to end solitary confinement in city jails. A lot of that impetus came from the death of trans woman Lailene Polanco on Rikers Island back in 2019.
Yeah, her family does not consider this a sufficient amendment to the law. They're going to keep working on it. In Virginia, a teacher who refused to acknowledge the pronouns of a trans student and was suspended has now gotten a court to unsuspend him at the school while legal actions continue over that. So the kids will be so happy to have him back running their classes.
A lot of people we know are signing on to a letter asking for reconsideration of the severity of the sex offense registry, a range of LGBTQ groups, calling for modifications of the law. They're not talking about getting rid of it, but it includes signers like NCLR, Center for HIV Law Policy, TAG, Housing Works, et cetera, and including our friend Bill Dobbs, who is heading this up, and Professor Art Leonard and Norman Siegel.
All right, we have 10 minutes. Let's hit the road.
All right. International news?
Yes. In Chile, the very conservative president, Sebastián Piñera, now says he supports same-sex marriage, which has, of course, been mandated by the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights. The Chilean courts told him he didn't have to do it, but he now says he's for it and wants it done quickly. We'll believe it when we see it.
In India, and the Madras High Court issued a wide-ranging order for the protection of LGBTQ people. And when a court like this does it, it has national implications.
Isn't it Madras in India, if you're not talking about the shorts?
Let's call the whole thing off.
Yes. Society must change, he said, not LGBTQ people. In Afghanistan, a strange picture celebrating pride, Kurdistan troops with guns and a banner and flags from the Federation of Anarchism Era. Their banner says, "These faggots kill fascists." Okay.
In Euskadi, Spain, last October 15th, a 15-year-old wore a skirt in support of women to school in solidarity. And he got sent to a psychologist, and his parents punished him. So students started doing things for a year, and now the faculty in all of May wore skirts in solidarity with him.
Yeah, almost enough to get me into a skirt. Thank you. That's a good laugh. In Uganda, cops have arrested 44 LGBT people who were in a shelter. They just walk into the shelter and grabbed everybody. And in Ghana, where they arrested 21 activists who were at a conference in a hotel a couple of weeks ago, 16 women and 5 men, an LGBT conference, the court has denied them bail.
In Manitoba, that gay couple that got married in a church in 1974 have lost their legal battle to have their marriage recognized. Same-sex marriage was legalized in Manitoba in 2004, and the courts are saying, no, we're not going that far back. It wasn't legal then.
7,500 at a peaceful pride march in Jerusalem. where, you know, in 2015, some bystander killed a 16-year-old. Very few protesters. Things are getting a little better. And keep your eye on the Cook Islands, where the government promises a new bill will decriminalize homosexuality and might even legalize same-sex relationships.
Okay. In AIDS news, Gunga Stone, the co-founder of God's Love We Deliver, a meal delivery program for people with AIDS, started in 1985. In the worst years of the pandemic, has died at the age of 79. She started delivering on her bicycle. Now 2.5 million meals are delivered annually to New York's homebound of all kinds. Her philosophy, food is love. Act with urgency. No bureaucracy. If you're sick, you can't wait. You've got to get your meals.
She was a real hero, a real hero.
Well, you know, these are prepared meals. The first time she delivered a meal, it was a mix for bread, and the guys threw it across the room. I can't cook. I'm too sick. And that was her first delivery. And she went back and did prepared meals.
The Biden budget, as advertised a while ago, does include a $670 million increase in funding to end the epidemic. More money for PrEP, for treatment, housing, Native American communities, et cetera. We'll see where that gets in the Congress.
The UK equivalent of Broadway Cares here, the Theatre Make a Difference Trust, is closing down, partly because of the pandemic and partly because, you know, they're making so much progress around AIDS in Great Britain in terms of controlling it.
In Michigan, the Ingham County prosecutor ordered a review of all old prosecutions of HIV-positive people and found two. One had already been dropped and one is pending. They ordered the motion refusing prosecution in that case. It is really important that we stop criminalizing people with HIV.
Well, in Nevada, Governor Steve Sisolak signed the bill modernizing the law, and he did it wearing a pin from the Elizabeth Taylor AIDS Foundation.
And as we feared, Scott County, Indiana, has voted to end their needle exchange program, although they have delayed that till the end of the year. So activists are going to still try to change that around because it's been a huge, successful program.
Well, even Trump Surgeon General Jerome Adams testified in favor of keeping the program.
And
go ahead.
In Georgia, we mourn the loss of Dr. John Peterson. He was a black gay psychologist, early AIDS researcher in behavioral ways. And he was one of the first to talk about the causes of the epidemic, especially in the black community, being not just the virus, but but discrimination and other issues like that that led people to become infected.
He is second from left in that picture.
Yeah.
He was the first black gay man to become a full professor there at Georgia State.
And we celebrate the hiring of a new director of the Office of National AIDS Policy, Dr. Harold Phillips, who is an out black HIV-positive man. He's held a number of government AIDS jobs, and people are very happy that he's got the job now.
Okay. Entertainment news?
Yes, in our remaining 4.5 minutes. I watched the end of Pose. I watched every episode of the series. It was wonderful. I really will miss it. And they did a great job with the last double episode. Very well done.
Well, someone who brought so many shows of the 70s and 80s, et cetera, Douglas Kramer, producer of Love Boat, Dynasty, Peyton Place, that's the 60s, The Odd Couple, Batman, and more, has died at 89. He is survived by his husband, Hubert Bush. He was the producing partner of Alan Spelling. He had an eye for camp.
Aaron Spelling.
Aaron Spelling. He had an eye for camp. He introduced gay and black characters when that was very rare. And he was also a renowned art collector.
And who did he cast on the Love Boat but Andy Warhol, Bob Mackie, and Holston all made guest appearances on the Love Boat per Doug Kramer.
Okay, we don't usually keep you up on RuPaul's drag race, but they crowned Simone as America's next drag superstar. Simone said, I had to learn to love my blackness, my queerness, and myself. And so on the show, it was a kind of a love letter to blackness and queerness.
PBS this week is running the terrific documentary, The Lavender Scare, all about the government discrimination against LGBTQ people in the 50s and 60s. Highly, highly recommended. Look for it in your guide on your TV or on the PBS website, perhaps. The Lavender Scare.
I hope Merrick Garland, our attorney general, watches it and gets an appreciation for what we're going through.
Whoa. And Danger Force, a Nickelodeon show, has cast a trans actor, Sasha Cohen, 13 years old, trans male. He's cast as a guest on one episode of Danger Force.
Yes. Never thought he'd get a trans role, but now wants to be a role model. Love, Simon, and X-Men actress Alexandra Shipp came out in an emotional Instagram post at 28. She said she struggled with her sexuality and her femininity and got scared it was too late for love. Now she's happy every effing day, she said. It's never too late to be you. She's now 29.
I just want to, because we've raced through this and have a few extra seconds. The Pose finale dealt with access to protease inhibitors, Billy Porter giving his meds to his boyfriend to save his life, and then dying himself, sorry for the spoiler, recreated the ACT UP demonstration at the FDA and the ashes actions where we dumped people's ashes. We did it at the White House. They did it at a church in the village.
Is all this in Sarah Schulman's book?
Yes, it is. And recreated another ACT UP meeting. Really moving, terrific documentation of a lot of our lives. And I really appreciate what Pose has done over 3 years. I think they've been extremely responsible in bringing to life these communities and these issues.
All right. So do sign up for our emails at gayusatv.org. We're going to include a lot of extras. Andre Thomas's article. I have a review of Peter Tatchell's documentary there, and other things that you can and read about. And also, if you want to make a Pride donation to AUSA, you can do it there too.
Well, that's always welcomed, and we're always grateful for that. And we hope you're finding ways to celebrate or demonstrate or do whatever in Pride Month, and we.
Everybody should do it in their own way.
Exactly. We'll see you next week. Thank you for watching.
We have about 20 seconds. So how are you, Ann? Are we ever going to do this show together in the studio again?
Who knows? Who cares? This is working okay.
Thank you for being with us, everyone.
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
And again, we'll see you next week. Bye.